again, it's covered under the privacy law as well as state law and city ordinance that we are allowed to access that information for public health, for mitigating the spread of communicable disease. There are specific illnesses that we are tasked with following up on, and those would be the only illnesses that we would be looking into records for, and only for the dates of service of the actual lab test that we receive.
Okay, so Courtney, can you go through a procedure? You know, I'm familiar with the Lyme disease and the recording, the CDC, and everything we already have access to. So typically, the lab gets the result, and the lab has to report it to the doctor and the CDC, and then the CDC sends the city of Franklin those results. So you have them. Sometimes I've seen that you have them faster than the doctor's office gets back to the patient. So I'm not understanding how this will actually increase your accuracy. So you said it's going to ensure test results are accurate. Tell me how it would ensure the test results are accurate.
So there are certain communicable diseases where a lab could be a potential positive or a confirmed positive. It could be still pending, depending on if it's a culture or a different type of medium that's used. Oftentimes, lab reports, when they come to us, do not indicate that. So we will have to call to find out if this is the final lab result or if it's just a preliminary result. So that's one example. Another example is, you're right, sometimes we do receive the lab results faster than the doctor's office does, and it is our practice, since we are not physicians, we don't want to be the person to call and tell a patient what their lab results are, so we always circle back with the provider to make sure they've seen the results and make sure that they are accurate and find out what they've talked to the patient about before we do end up calling them.
Alderwoman, that level of question is, although interesting, a little deep for the subject item. So do you have something?
Well, I think it's important to lay out and explain a scenario on how you would use this related to COVID, because that's the issue that's really brought this forward right now, although, you know, there are other communicable diseases. But just walk us through, so for the people who are online listening can understand what the process would be in this, from the time the person walks into their doctor's office to the time you need to access.
Yeah, so specific to COVID, there are excellent examples. So a lot of times what happens, the individual will go to the doctor's office and they will get tested. Test results, depending on where the test is happening, take anywhere from 24 to 72, sometimes even a week, to come back to us. We'll receive notification that an individual was tested, but the results aren't there. So we'll need to find out from the physician exactly what was going on, why were they tested, and try to get as much information as we can, and then we'll call the actual patient that was tested. What was happening early on, and is still happening in some instances, individuals were going through the drive-up testing, and they were having a swab done, but because there was no physician or anybody indicating what their next steps were, those individuals didn't know that they needed to stay home. So they were going back to work, symptomatic, and spreading illness. So this, and when we would get those indications that people were tested, we were calling physician offices trying to figure out who did the test and why they were tested, because a lot of times we weren't getting complete information, and it was taking a while, understandably, to get a response from them because they were so overwhelmed. So in that instance, it would have helped us to be able to see the notes for that person when they came in to understand the scenario of what was going on, and then we could have called the patient right away. So that's an example in COVID. So right now, again, like I said, we're still getting notification that people were tested, and it's incomplete what's going on and what their circumstance is. Also, for monitoring of people who are inpatient, we're still having to monitor them for symptoms to determine when they can be released from isolation. So rather than have to call every day and find a floor nurse to take some time to let us know what their vitals were that day, temperature, are they still coughing, we would be able to see that on this record by looking at that date for what their vital signs were that morning.
And then what would you do with that? I mean, what role do you play in having access to someone's temperature and vital?
Okay, so that is key to letting them be released from isolation back into general populace. So the criteria to be released from isolation is 7 days since symptom onset plus at least 72 hours fever-free and improving respiratory conditions. So for some of the individuals who are hospitalized, they may be hospitalized for longer than that duration, and they may be able to come off of isolation precautions.
So is it your role that you have to, as the health department, give that final release approval, or is that the doctor? Who gives the final release approval?
Release from isolation is with the health department.
Okay, that's helpful.
Okay.
But you don't know of any opt-out for the city portion?
In reference to, let me make sure that I'm understanding your question. You're asking, does somebody as a patient have the right to opt out of their data being put into a database that other hospital systems or healthcare providers can see? Is that the question you're asking?
No, she wants to know if they can opt out of having you see them.
Again, the only thing that we would be looking for or asking for is anything related to communicable diseases as specified in the privacy law. And the privacy law does have very severe and strict consequences if you breach HIPAA for any reason. We're in public health. We don't need to know anything other than that. So there are very strict laws and guidelines that prohibit us from looking at that.
I understand all the laws, but the way people are with government access to private data, aren't really that. It's more about government control of personal information for some people.
Absolutely. I understand that sentiment.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor, and it's been seconded.
One more quick point.
Alderman Mayor.
Courtney, I imagine we will be seeing you pretty regularly for the foreseeable future. At some point, maybe like 60 days out from now, could you give us a real brief summary on how this system is working for you and what your intentions will probably be at the end of the 90 days?
Yeah, absolutely. My plan was to come back before we were done with the 90-day trial to present, how it was working for us and if I wanted to move forward. Yes.
Perfect. Thanks.
All those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 I'm sorry, I keep doing that to you. Madam Clerk, let's do a roll call, please.
Alderman DeAndrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
I'm going to abstain.
Alderwoman Hanneman.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Motion carries 5 ayes, no noes, 1 abstention, no absent.
Thank you,
Ms. Day. Move on to item 5 on page 107, authorizes Franklin to participate in intergovernmental cooperation agreement for joint purchasing for necessary supplies for COVID.
So moved.
Second.
Let's give it to Alderman Mayer, Alderman Barber. All those in favor? Madam Clerk.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderman DeAndrea?
Aye.
Motion carries 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. One note on that, the county is charging a surcharge on that. So it appears, as usual, whatever we save will be taken back by the county. G6, page 117 is a report on the expenditures currently for COVID-19. Mr. Ratzenberg.
So the council approved on March 17th the allocation of $250,000 to assist the city in responding to the public health emergency. Finance has taken upon itself to report to you on a regular basis what the city has spent to date. The details are in the council action sheet on page 117, but through April 15th, the city had spent a little over $109,000 to date on this particular emergency. So we are obviously using the funds that this council has made available, and we'll continue to report to you on a regular basis what's going on.
Currently, there's some CARES Act money at the state that the governor's holding up. We have not applied for CARES money. We're going to get the state rep to give us the appropriate forms. The county is applying for a whole bunch of CARES money that's being held up by the governor. I hope they get it. Just a reminder to Common Council, those who have projects coming up, the fines and forfeitures money is way down. Ambulance revenues is way down, as you're going to discuss here in another item or two. Tipping fees are way down. So let's not come up with any more pet projects this year. Okay. G7, page 119. The mayor comes up with a pet project. Authorization to cover first dollar medical costs for COVID-19 treatment.
Mr. Rosenberg. Option one.
This actually probably doesn't cost us anything, hopefully. Alderman Mayor, you made the motion?
Yes, sir.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor? Aye. No, let's do a roll call. Thank you. I keep forgetting. I'm so used to it. This, by the way, is very good for our employees, but I don't expect it will pay out.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderman Nelson.
Aye.
Motion carries, 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. G8 and 121, a resolution authorizing certain officials to execute a development agreement with Knollwood Legacy Apartments. Alderman Mayer. Dan, you want this one?
Nope.
Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Mr. Morrow.
Notice at your place tonight, I put a small addition to the basically putting stipulations on building permits, not occupancy permits, to be consistent with all of our other projects in the city.
Madam Clerk.
Is he talking in the microphone?
He is. Mr. City Attorney.
Here.
The recommended motion is on the action sheet, and it does state upon review and acceptance by the city attorney, and my understanding of that condition is that would include changes thought to be required under that review.
Is that your motion, Alderman D'Andrea?
Yes, it is.
Alderman
yes.
Barber? All right, Madam Clerk.
Alderman Nelson?
No.
Alderman Barber?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
No.
Alderman D'Andrea?
Aye.
4 ayes, 2 noes, no absent, no abstentions. Motion carries. G9 on page 147 is a request to pay stormwater water reviews related to 9611 South 58th Street. Mr. Morrow?
So historically, the city does not get involved in private property drainage issues. This is a project that the Board of Public Works discussed in detail. Considering the history, they decide this one might be worthwhile. And the situation is that Crohn's, as you know, built a new facility. They had a stormwater project. It was fully in compliance with all state, local, federal requirements. And as a process of that, just because of the way storm detention basins operate, they discharge a greater volume of water over a longer period of time at a slower rate. And that was causing some problems downstream before it got to a city facility. And so because Crohn's is spending a lot of their own money doing this, they asked the city if we would forgive the consultant fees, which is probably going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $3,000 when all is said and done. As with anyone else who does a project, we have consultants review the make sure all the numbers are correct, and that's what they're asking the city to cover.
And this $3,000 would come out of those water funds?
It would come out of the engineering funds. We have some money there to pay for consultants. This is the difference is we would just not be reimbursed as we typically are.
Is there a motion regarding this matter?
So moved.
Second.
This is moved to not go for reimbursement. Option A, right? Alderman Barber?
Yes.
Option A?
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Clerk?
Alderman D'Andrea?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderman Barber?
Aye.
Alderman Nelson?
Aye.
Motion carries, 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. Please pass this one. G10, page 149, 29 new chairs.
So move.
Who's going to second it?
Second.
Let's do this loud and proud, please. Madam Clerk.
Alderman Nelson?
Aye.
Alderman Barber?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderman Dandria?
Aye.
Motion carries. 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. Go buy some new chairs. Thank you. G11, page 153, is a resolution to sign a temporary grading easement for 8003 South 68th Street.
So move option A.
I'll second.
Discussion? Madam Clerk.
Alderman Dandria?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderman Barber?
Aye.
Alderman Nelson?
Aye.
Motion carries, 6 ayes, no noes, no absence, no abstentions. G12 on page 165 is granted gas and electric easement to WEPCO for the city-owned parcel at 3548 West County Line Road.
So move. Option A.
I'll second.
I note in the description it says County Line and Drexel Avenue. The two do not intersect.
Yeah.
And so it's west-south County Line Road.
Madam Clerk.
Alderman Dandria?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderman Barber?
Aye.
Alderman Nelson?
Aye.
Motion carries, 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. G13 on 173, request to bid for demolition of an abandoned home at 3548 West County Line Road, West-South County Line Road.
So moved.
Second.
Madam Clerk?
For discussion?
Mayor?
Alderman Nelson and Alderman Well.
Was this $25,000, or was this the whole demolition project brought in initially, or was this something that just came up after the fact?
We've anticipated this expenditure for some time when we've been providing budgets for the TID. So we, I'm not sure how to answer this. As discussed, we made it clear that this was an expenditure when we were looking at purchasing the property.
So we anticipated it?
Yes, sir.
Alderman Willow.
Well, similar question. So we're going to pay $25,000 or something to tear down a building that belonged to a developer previously?
That is correct.
Check with the chief, see if they want to burn it down.
I did, and with the COVID issues, and they're
got it.
Limiting training right now.
Madam Clerk?
Oh, I can't make sure of that.
Alderman Nelson?
Aye.
Alderman Barber?
Aye.
Alderwoman Hanneman?
Aye.
Alderwoman Wilhelm?
Aye.
Alderman Mayer?
Aye.
Alderman Dandria?
Aye.
Motion carries, 6 ayes, no noes, no absent, no abstentions. G14 on 175. Notice to waive late fees and can make other concessions for water and sewer utilities in accordance with Tony Evers number 11.
So move.
Second.
Discussion?
What is he?
Option A?
No.
A Adam is no action.
We've historically done this, but it could be a significant expenditure this year, so I just want to make you aware of it. If you want us to not do it for sewers, we could possibly take that course, but it would be extremely excessive on staff time.
Your motion is to place on file. Motion is to place on file.
No
Let's
action.
Just do a voice vote on this. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. G15 on page 189, direct staff to prepare a 2020 budget amendment, capital outlay, equipment replacement, street improvement, capital improvement to reduce $1 million landfill siting resources and remove selected projects from the 2020 capital funds or to increase note proceeds. Mr. Rotzenberg with the happy news.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The council action sheet gives you some background information. Included in the 2020 budget for the city, we included $2,252,000 of landfill siting revenues expected for the current year, and an additional $458,000 of these revenues into the general fund. The $2,002,000 was in the capital funds. It now would appear that these funds will not arrive this year. And at the bottom of page 188 or 189 of your packet is a graph showing the monthly revenues that have been coming in over time. And when the 2020 budget was put together, we were operating in the nearly $3 million range for this revenue source. And since November of last year, that revenue source has declined. When staff spoke with the operator of the landfill, they indicated that two things were happening. One, they had been directing materials to Franklin rather than their Menominee Falls operations because there was activity going on in the Menominee Falls operation that precluded them from sending material there. And secondly, they just felt that some materials weren't coming in because the market had changed. And these discussions took place prior to the health emergency. And they said that we are now currently operating in the $150,000 a month range, so we're probably in the $2 million a year range in terms of revenues. The most recent month revenue came in after this was prepared and was in the $160,000, so it's still at that reduced level. But we have not yet seen what the revenues are going to be once the public health emergency begins to take place and what's going on with it. On page 190 of your packet, we've indicated how much of the landfill siting revenues represents of the total revenue source within any particular fund. And you'll note there that the landfill siting revenues are significant portions of the capital funds. And that was a change that was made with the 2020 budget. Typically, the three of the four capital funds in prior years had depended upon tax levy for a significant portion of their revenues.